Have you ever wanted an instruction manual for your life?
Something that went over the stuff that isn't always obvious?
Or even some of the stuff that is?
My name is Sarah Ramsey. I'm a singer, voice, performance, and growth coach. And I've spent a lifetime open to the lessons behind our experiences and seeking out pathways to becoming more enlightened, better humans.
And I'm Dr. Stefan Rabnett. I've been a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine for over 20 years, and I'm also a Jay Shetty certified life coach. I've long been fascinated with our human superpowers, the ones we don't quite have the instruction manual for, and I'm forever curious about how we can unlock them.
Welcome to This Big Life podcast, where we have deeper conversations about the nature of existence, our place in it, and how we can leverage these things to create the life we want.
Basically, we're bringing the woo-woo to you. But don't worry, we don't take ourselves too seriously. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. Today, we are talking about imposter syndrome. Yes, imposter. There's something about it that I think of Peter Sellers and the Pink Panther for some reason. So I don't even know why. But it's something that's kind of come up more. It's kind of more of something that's in, I think, the vernacular a little bit more and people can identify with. So we're going to dive into that today. We're going to talk about imposter syndrome, get an idea of what it is, different types of it potentially, and things we can do to kind of move past it. So again, I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, it's another, you know, not small topic.
No. And it really kind of, again, incorporates a lot of other things, you know, especially I think that idea of judgment, right? And kind of the environment and the different things. And suddenly we find ourselves in a space and we're just like, wait a minute, what's going on here? So anyways, first of all, I guess maybe we should talk about what is it? So Sarah, what is imposter syndrome?
Well, I think it is really rooted in comparison. So it's obviously us comparing ourselves to other people who are doing the same thing or in the same space and feeling like we don't measure up. They occupy the place in question, which is usually when we're talking about imposter syndrome, we're usually talking about it in terms of being an expert in something in some manner. So there's a real root in comparison and we end up feeling like the fraud.
Yeah.
So somebody else is better and we don't measure up.
Yeah.
And I think inherent in that there's this fear that we're going to be found out.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's it, is just that aspect of the fraud, right? Like, I've always kind of learned it as like we doubt our achievements despite evidence to the contrary.
Yes.
Right. And I think that's where that expert piece comes in. It's just like logically, you know, like, oh, yeah, you're good. But there's that feeling of just doubt. And with that doubt, though, comes that element of exposure of a fraud. Like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to be kind of found out. It's like, I really have no idea what I'm talking about. So it's interesting because I think it's definitely something that's very common. But up until more recently, probably people didn't want to talk about or be vulnerable enough to kind of say like, hey, actually, that's me too. Because I think it's very common. In fact, I'm experiencing it a little bit right now. You're doing a little bit of an imposter syndrome talking about imposter syndrome. So there we go. It's the Meta podcast there today. So have you experienced it yourself?
Oh, I live in it a good deal of the time. This is not a foreign concept for me. It's interesting because we talk about imposter syndrome like it's a specific thing that we experience once in a while. And I feel like I feel like it's inherent in my personality. Like it is, I feel like I am in it so much of the time. As I get older and wisdom and maturity and all of that, I have learned to recognize it and work with it and work towards pulling myself out of it. However, it's real comfortable territory for me.
Do you, is it the, of the phrase just popped in and I never really associated the two, but the phrase fake it till you make it.
Mm.
Do you think that's related to imposter syndrome at all? Because sometimes, you know, we're told like fake it till you make it, fake it till you make it, fake it till you make it, and be like, okay, well, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm just going to kind of jump in. And I think sometimes when personally, when I'm been in the past, like in the fake it till you make it, there's that element of what am I really doing here? Do I really like, this is, I am not qualified to kind of have an opinion because I don't know everything about it. But
yeah. I think that concept of fake it till you make it, I think it absolutely can dial in to imposter syndrome, but I don't think it necessarily dials in to imposter syndrome. I think it really depends on how you come at fake it till you make it. So in my teaching voice, this is a concept that we talk about, fake it till you make it. And it's specifically in the realm of performance. And if you are uncomfortable as a performer, that's a thing that your audience is going to pick up on. So whether the audience even like tangibly picks up on it or whether it's just an undercurrent that is unnamed, they pick up on the fact that there's a discomfort there. And typically that translates into disconnection with your audience. They're two sides of the same coin. So when we talk about developing that relationship with your audience as a performer, sometimes you have to approach that in a way that is fake it till you make it, because you have to do it to develop the comfort level with doing it.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we talk about that, we talk about, you know, how it, you know, but if it triggers you this way, then leave that alone. And it, so we talk about the point of fake it till you make it. And it's not just a standalone concept. It's a specifically a means to an end and a route, but not necessarily the only route. So I do think that fake it till you make it can actually be a really useful tool in a learning process. But I think that it can end up in imposter syndrome if you're not doing it with a level of consciousness around it, for sure.
So I guess it's, in and of itself, it's not likely to be kind of that main cause, but it can be one of those environmental things that just kind of nudges and just cements that, like, I'm a fraud. Anyways, so did you, I don't know if you've come across like Dr. Valerie Young, and she talks about like there's five types of imposter syndrome. Have you heard those?
I have not specifically. Let's hear it.
Because I like, she kind of breaks it down as five types, and you know, potentially we resonate with one or a couple of them. And I certainly did with one of these. So, anyways, I'll do a very brief kind of description. So there's five types. There's the perfectionist. And that's someone who's sets unrealistic high goals that kind of can't almost be achieved. There's the superhuman that wants to work harder than anyone and feels like they got to like kind of work harder than everybody. There's the natural genius that expects great success to happen instantaneously and with minimal effort. There's the soloist that resists all assistance. Like, no. I got to do it. I got to do it myself. And there's the expert, feels they have to know everything, absolutely everything about something, or going to be exposed as a fraud. So like I think these are like five types of where our kind of imposter syndrome kind of goes. You're chuckling because I want to know.
I'm laughing because what's it called when you're all of them?
Sarah.
Yeah. All of them rolled into one. That's me.
That's you. Okay. Yeah. So there's the perfectionist, the superhuman, the natural genius, the soloist, and the expert. So all of them, of course, we're all of them. But was one of those, did one of those jump out more than the others?
I think the combination of the natural genius and the expert
totally.
Is the closest for me. So natural genius, the specific slice of that that speaks to me is that there are areas of life that come really easily to me. You know, things in music, quite honestly, I did not have to work hard for. I just intrinsically understood them and could do them. And then when you get to a level that you have to start working hard for things and they don't just come with that same degree of ease, that's when the imposter syndrome starts popping in. Mm,
totally.
So it's that balance beam between an area of truly natural genius to, oh, if I want to move farther in this area, now I actually have to put the work in. Does that mean that now I'm a fraud because it's not just coming so easily?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Eh? Again, those patterns and those voices and those kind of different, oh, I guess in a way, reactions that we have. But I agree, the natural genius is definitely the one I kind of have resonated with. Like if, you know, I'm not an instantaneous expert and like gifted or something like that, then somehow I'm an imposter. You know, and I say that out loud right now, and logically I realize the ridiculousness of that. But yet there is that inherent belief that's kind of a little bit there. Like if I'm not an absolute instant natural, then I'm a fraud. And it's, of course, on one level silly, but it is an interesting insight into that kind of just like that pressure that we put on ourselves. And I agree. I think the three and the five, like the expert kind of goes into that, right? Like you feel like you have to know everything before you start.
Yeah.
And so definitely, I think, you know, we've done steps to kind of move past that, because certainly starting a podcast, we haven't been experts before we started, which people listening, I'm sure, like, yeah, I don't know if you guys are the expert type there, but it is interesting, because I think though there's, and I think this speaks to the bigger thing, there's areas, I guess, we put our imposter syndrome-ness, and then there's areas we don't. Like, as you say, like areas kind of that come naturally, we kind of like don't necessarily have that. But the areas that we're either new transitioning to, or there's a different environment involved in it, then it's easier to kind of put those imposter syndrome kind of issues and overlay them. So,
yeah.
Yeah, but you realize, I think, how common this is for people.
Yeah.
Like it's a very common thing.
Yeah.
So what do you think are things that kind of, I guess, factors that accentuate the imposter syndrome? Like what type of kind of environment do you think is conducive to them being accentuated? And then I guess we can go into the counter of this, like things that we kind of feel that like help us kind of be present and not with that.
So I think the immediate thing that popped into my head in answer to that question is community.
Interesting, that go both ways, yeah.
Community of peers. So if you are someone who feels the need to position yourself as an expert in something, then actually being in a community of peers, not people who are looking to you to be the expert in that thing, but people who are also experts in their field who can kind of talk you off the ledge a little bit, give some perspective to, you know, this piece was hard for me. I didn't get here overnight. I had to learn this. Here's some advice I can give you. Oh, here's some insight I can share to get you further along faster. So that piece of community of peers, and maybe that speaks to the soloist, you know, subtype, but I think basically it's like looking behind the curtain, right? When I think imposter syndrome is all about, do not look at the man behind the curtain, just look at the shiny person on the stage.
Mm.
So actually having a sense of who's behind the curtain in community, so not just our own curtain, because that's the one that we don't want to show to the world, but understanding that we're not alone, that everybody has a man behind the curtain, you know? Yeah. And So I think that's a piece of it. And I think really understanding that we, so this is easier said than done. So maybe say as I do, not as, say as I do as I say, not as I do. But the concept of we need to take the pressure off ourselves. And when you look at a child growing, so this is close quarters for you, Stefan.
Yep.
When you look at a child and they are in that sort of 9 months to a year, typically, I mean, it can be lots of time outside that, but and you're seeing them starting to move toward walking, they do what? They crawl first. Often they crawl backwards first, and then they pull up on furniture, and then they furniture walk, and then maybe they get brave and take two steps by themselves first. That's long before they're running, let alone walking by themselves. So there's all these steps to it. And yet as adults, when we take on something new, for some reason, we expect to immediately be Olympic athletes.
Totally. Yeah.
And we bypass the grace to allow ourselves to crawl backwards and furniture walk and do all the pieces that lead up to being more of an expert level at that thing.
Why do you think we do that?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know. It's a big one. I guess
comparison, maybe.
Well, I think there is like community, you know, you mentioned community and it, I guess the big social structure that goes both ways. Like it can be an aspect of support, but it's also a pool of preconceived notions and stuff that mm-hmm. we exist in. Like I think, I probably totally wrong about this, but I think the imposter syndrome, I think it was at first with respect to, I think women in the workplace or something like that, where there was like an aspect of bias and exclusion, I think, right? Like, so basically mm-hmm. some hard parameters that emphasize you're not good enough, right? So it's like we exist not in a vacuum, but it's like there's subtle loudspeakers like going like, hey, you're not good enough. I don't know why I'm thinking about this now, but I don't know if you remember Saturday Night Live and Kevin Nealon's Subliminal Man.
I do not.
I'm not going to go there. But basically, anyways, if someone's out there listening, someone's chuckling because if they've seen that. But because it's basically, you know, we're bombarded with so many images constantly, right? Like we're bombarded with so much stuff. And there is, I think, a general atmosphere of you're not good enough, right? So I think sometimes in environments when other people are also thinking we're not good enough, like I'm not good enough. You can really kind of start to pick up. And I think that those can be definitely like almost accelerants to that imposter syndrome. And I think, again, in general, we're kind of the natural environment and discourse is you have to be better, right? You're not good enough, right? And I think there's a bit of that that really kind of brings out the imposter feeling in all of us, because I think there's also with that an almost an underlying idea that I'm bad, I'm not good enough, like in whatever sense that is. And so then I take that into whatever task that I'm potentially doing, and then, you know, I'm an imposter. But and especially I think when, you know, you're doing something different or you're new to reach a professional level of something, right? Or you're new to something, then you're really kind of aware of your environment. And if there is a lot of kind of self-judgment in that environment, then you really kind of take it as your own. So I think that those are things that definitely kind of impact the belief that we're a fraud, right? Even again, because it's one of those things we logically can make that case that we're not, or I have this education, or this is my job, or, you know, whatever the case, I know logically I'm not an imposter. But that belief kind of comes from that non-logical place of like, oh my God, I'm not good enough, right? And I think that that's part of the environment in terms of generally, that's kind of a bit of a theme that is out there in our society, right? That aspect of self-judgment to not good enough. And then with that, of people judging themselves, and then we kind of pick up on that as well. And then, I think that's it. I think really self-doubt is a big thing with respect to the imposter syndrome. So, that's my little tangent on that.
As an aside, I would just like to acknowledge that imposter syndrome, as it plays into family patterns, is a whole other thing. So
go on.
Look at my family. When everybody in your family does the same thing, right? My whole family is musicians, singers. My parents, my brother, myself, my other siblings, not so much, but the four of us all exist in that world. And my mother was also a voice teacher. So I am not by nature a competitive person at all. So it's not coming from a sense of competition. That is not where that lives for me. But there is this thing of like, we all do the same thing and I don't measure up.
Well, comparison and competition are different. I think that's what you're saying. So you have like legit fuel for your mind to be like, oh, there's an example of why I'm an imposter, right? Like right beside me. Yeah. Across from the dinner table. In fact, there's four people at the table. You know, so that's true. That's interesting. And I guess that's interesting because I think they say like it happens as you get higher up in your fields and different things like that. Yes. And I guess because then you are really surrounded, it's easy to compare like, oh my gosh, you know, like Joe Blow just wrote his fifth dissertation this month or something like that. Like it's easy to really kind of have an aspect of comparison when you're more and more specialized and there's more and more examples of people right in your vicinity that have really achieved.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. Cause it's not like your family members are putting you down in order to feel good.
No.
Cause that happens sometimes, right? That's not happening.
I want to be incredibly clear.
Yeah.
That was not my circumstance.
Totally.
It is not coming from that place.
It's just experts being experts. It's just people that excelling, right? They're doing it in their relation to themselves, not other people.
Exactly.
Right? But we take it like, oh my God. Like, you know, I watch my 4-year-old, one of his best friends now is 6 just because of circumstance and stuff.
Yeah.
And I can see, you know, they have a great time and stuff, but there's still times where he's just like, what? Oh, I can't. I should be able to do that, but I can't, right? Because he's doing it by comparison. And so anyways, I guess we always have the examples of that.
Yeah. I also think that when we're talking about imposter syndrome, there's a real piece of this that relates to what is actually a whole different subject, but there's a real relationship between them that you kind of alluded to a minute ago. And that is a term that I had never heard until, I don't know, maybe a year ago, but I think it is such a fascinating, phenomenal term. And that is main character energy.
Interesting. What's that?
So, I mean, when you just think about it, when we exist in, I think in the world these days, when you scroll social media, now obviously there's confirmation bias, so you get what you search and all of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you scroll and there's all these, I'm going to sell you this course so that you can become this. So it's all of this pushing out, you should be better, you should be more, you should do more because you deserve to be the main character in your own life, basically, right? And you like bigger, better. What is wrong with not necessarily having aspirations to be, you know, selling $1 million courses or whatever? I'm fully just making stuff up, but you know what I mean? No, what is wrong with just like really loving being a wife and mother, which let's just talk about that for a second, that is like out the window in terms of acceptable places to hold in the world.
Totally.
But so that like supporting character energy where you're happy working as a barista or, working as a secretary or whatever. I'll tell you what, when I worked as a secretary, that was some of the most fulfilling time. I loved what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it wasn't a forever place for me, but I really actually did love what I did at that point in time. So I think imposter syndrome, if we are really and truly happy in more of that like supporting role, but the world is telling us that we have to be bigger and better all the time.
And that difference between those two things is like a total foster environment for imposter syndrome,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because it's interesting because it's true. Like even with marketing and you learn like with courses or doing different things, you got to solve a problem for somebody. Yeah. You got to identify their problem and then you got to solve it for them. And it's true. So all this stuff we're exposed to on social media is the problems. Why is this a problem for you? Problem, 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 problem. So with that, you could get put on that lens of just like, I guess I'm a big walking problem in all these different ways. So it fosters that doubt. And then it's just like, well, who am I really? Like really, you know, and that aspect of, oh my gosh, like I must be some sort of fraud because I'm not fitting in, right? And I think even if we doubt the bigger picture, right? You said before, like it's like looking behind the veil or to get past it, but it's like you feel like you don't fit in front of the veil, right? Like you feel like all this world is just kind of like, so it's just like, am I like, I am, and like, am I just, I don't fit in here, right? So I'm even an imposter from an aspect of, I just don't fit in, right? Yeah. And I think, you know, as you said too, it's easy to like the simple things, like, as you said, like that's still hard things, but like, you know, being a parent or just doing something simple or doing something that, you know, we're often told that that's not good enough, right? You got to excel.
Yeah.
But yeah. So what can we do to help us through that? Like, what are the things that we can do to kind of help us move through that? Like once we identify, I guess that's the first thing is kind of being like, okay, I guess this is kind of the program I'm running right now is like, I'm kind of playing the software program of imposter syndrome. So what can we do?
So I do think that the first step is starting to be aware of the stories that we tell ourselves around that, right? Because they're stories.
Mm-hmm.
They are just stories. And the reality is, and there's so much information out there on this subject, but don't believe everything you think, if you've heard that, right? Like our brains tell us things all the time that are patently untrue. Imposter syndrome being a really good piece of that. So being aware of the stories and the fact that we have choice in what pieces of it we're going to believe or engage with or invest in. Taking a realistic assessment of where our credibility is, what our past successes have been that would, you know, suggest areas of maybe some expertise and skill. Let me tell you, just as a very side note on that one, I've been updating my website again, which I haven't done in years. And as a result, I've been asking some people that I've worked with since the last time. I haven't updated my website in like, I don't know, 6 years or something like that. So people that I've worked with in the interim asked for some testimonials. It is quite a thing when you ask people for testimonials to see what they say about working with you.
That's such a good exercise.
And it's
a hard one.
It's a hard one. You have to be willing to hear it. And if you have trouble hearing nice things about yourself, it's hard, but it's so incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
Because I've been working with a business coach, and he looked at my testimonial page on my website and he said, oh my God, you have like so many people saying such amazing things about working with you. This, like, you know, writing the copy for this or that, it's just going to write itself because you've got all of this amazing information. So when you do an exercise like that, it's really it makes it a lot harder to sit in that imposter syndrome when you see all these people saying things about you that reflect your level of expertise.
Yeah, no, definitely. That would be a very good exercise. And again, a challenging one, because it sounds easy to receive, but it's hard, right? Oh, it is, because we're like, oh yeah, I just want to hear good things about myself. But it, we do, we have those blocks. Because I think that imposter syndrome can even kind of filter that stuff. Like I've had it before. Well, if people compliment you, then it's almost like the imposter syndrome is saying, well, they're just telling me what I want to hear. Mm-hmm. Or they don't really believe that. Or like, it's interesting how you can really get those lenses on that kind of impact those things. So I guess it's right. Like, I think, you know, using as many little things just to kind of snap us out of that program, that imposter, that I'm not good enough. So exposing yourself and asking, like you did, in terms of looking at how people do perceive you, and then that does help to realize, okay, that this is my doubt, not theirs.
And I think that's an exercise that we can all do.
Yeah.
So for what that's worth, like I happen to be doing that in a context where I'm updating a website. So I had a real what I felt like. It was a legit ask. I'm updating my website. Could you write a testimonial? Blah, blah, blah. It does not have to be that, I don't know, solid a framework. It can literally be, like for people listening, it can be a lot gentler. It can be, I'm really trying to work on some stuff in myself. Would you be willing to write a few sentences about how you see me in terms of X. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, 90% of the people in your life are going to be willing to do that for you.
Yeah.
Because I've done that exercise in a coaching program years ago when I was doing Marie Forleo's B School. That was a piece that we had to do. And, you know, it was like get people to, I think they had to like name a word or a couple of words that most describe you. And you had to ask 10 people or something. I don't know, something along those lines. And every single person came back with their answer. People are absolutely willing to step up for you that way. So there are different ways you can frame it, even if it's not in a professional sense. You can get people to give you that information that is going to help you unlock those pieces of yourself.
Yeah, perspective, definitely.
Yeah,
no, I like that. I think eliciting help is a powerful tool, right? Because I think it takes a certain strength that in and of itself can, you know, nudge away the imposter syndrome, and then the results too, in terms of the feedback to be like, okay, that's right. There's a reactionary bit of my brain that's filtering information to say that I'm not good enough, but that's not a completely accurate perspective of what the kind of pool of data out there on me is in any way. So kind of that outward feedback. I like, you know, again, is one of the tools that I really like is kind of asking questions. You know, we kind of mentioned it before, but yeah, I'm kind of asking questions of our subconscious as a way to get past the filter. So even aspect of like, when I feel like that, like a doubt of like, is this like, what am I like, there's somebody, or I'm not good enough of this absolute expert, is saying, okay, is this true? And, because I think when we ask that a lot, or for me, it's not to get the counter like yes, no, or whatever, but it creates that space of, in terms of, okay, there's other factors impacting my perception that I'm not good enough, that I'm going to be a fraud. And it's not about my, you know, my skills or me in general. It's kind of about this other perception. So asking questions kind of creates that space of kind of allowing to have a little bit of clarity with that. So is this true? You know, even when there's a doubt, I like that question of like, is this mine? Mm-hmm. Right. And one level, like, of course it's mine. But on another level, that's where it's just like, okay, we're picking up from the environment, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's like that ambient lighting in a way accentuates the self-judgment and the imposter syndrome. So it's just kind of like, okay, is this mine, or is some of this kind of the environmental stuff? So if I ask those questions, I find it does nudge me sometimes. But it is interesting because I think, you know, imposter syndrome, there's like a general sense that it can come up, but then it could also just suddenly come up, right? Like I've had that coaching people sometimes, right? You know, you're just like, hey, suddenly, and then you know, you're talking to someone and then there's some, suddenly this little voice kind of comes in that's just like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like to yourself, right?
Yeah.
You're just like, and then you start having this commentary on commentary of just like, okay, well, and then it's just like, okay, first breathe, right? So it just kind of, for me, just taking a deep breath. And for anybody that's worked with me or is working with me online, it's okay. You might see me take a deep breath every once in a while, but that's just to be present with you. But I find that that helps. I have to do that first. And then sometimes in my mind, I can ask a question and then I'll get present. And sometimes it's even you're picking stuff up from the person you're interacting with. And it's not even that they've said it, but right, again, you mentioned too, it's just like we get so many cues, not just our voice, right? The little inflections, the little kind of tones, you can pick up on a theme. So if someone's judging themselves, sometimes you might find yourself judging you, mm-hmm. like you're judging your own mm-hmm. self. And you're just kind of picking up on different cues that are happening there. So I do like that question too. Like, is this mine? And I think again, the underscoring kind of theme too is forgiving ourselves for even experiencing the imposter syndrome. Because I think I've gone through that too. Well, I know what it is. I should be able to logically look past it and stuff. But I don't always. So it's a should, right? Yep. So the should comes in, like I should. Blah, blah. So it's forgiving myself that I even have imposter syndrome, you know, at times.
Especially when you are someone like both of us are, who work with people on moving through things
totally.
Like imposter syndrome.
Totally.
Feel like we should be able to, should. Be able to just navigate that for ourselves. Yeah, that can be a very weird cycle.
Yeah.
But we're all just real people.
We're all just real people. And it's, again, easier said, you know, done. But I think you mentioned it earlier, like do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
And there is even some value with that. Like I like to practice Tai Chi and Qigong, you know, and, you know, there's certain things that I think, people would benefit and I can show them an exercise, but I am nowhere near an expert mm-hmm. with respect to Tai Chi and Qigong, right? Like I do it and I love it, but it's always relative and stuff. But I think it's okay. Like if I say for you, I'm just like, oh, you know what? I think there's this little breathing exercise or there's a little point you can kind of Qigong into, or I think it'll help you. If I don't do that, because I'm just like, well, you know, I've only been practicing, you know, Qigong for 20 years and some people have been doing it for 40, then that's not really doing you like kind of a service at all. But it does kind of, that's a mentality that definitely does come up, you know? And I think I'm realizing in areas where I do feel like that's one of them for me, you know, with respect to that comes up with the imposter. It's easy to compare about how many people are more so. And then you can actually use it as a detriment in the sense of not sharing something that would be of value to somebody.
I think you just hit it on the head there. So there's a huge piece. I think it's a huge piece where when we devalue our own input because of our own fears around imposter syndrome, we are depriving somebody else of our input.
Mm-hmm.
Of any value that we might offer them. When we stop that, when we lower the barrier because of our own fear, we're depriving somebody else of the value that we actually do have to offer them, even if it's not everything, because nobody is everything. When you're doing a jigsaw puzzle, how frustrating is it to come to the end and be missing one piece?
Mm-hmm.
What if we are that one piece that they need to feel complete in that journey, and we lower that barrier because of our own imposter syndrome and don't offer them that one piece?
Totally. Yeah. No, absolutely. And again, you know, that's the thing with them. It's not a logical thing when we're in that moment. No. And that's what's definitely challenging, but it's very true. Right. And I think to kind of go around, like, so one of the things that helps move past imposter syndrome, I think, as you're saying, is that reminder that we're all in this together. It's kind of that kingdom of we. We're all kind of trying to move forward here. And with that, is every contribution is just that, a contribution. So imposter or not, you got to do what you kind of feel like is a contribution. And it is a good reminder because I personally, I do get, if I get stuck in a lot of different areas, I'll stop and ask, okay, what contribution can I be here? And again, we've talked about this. It's not to be a martyr. It's not to be like, oh, I'm going to do it. You know, no, it's just like, okay, if we're like all cells in the body and we're all working towards something, then what can I contribute? Mm-hmm. Like, what can this cell contribute right now? And then that's an easier way to realize every little contribution helps. Everything is a nudge forward. It's not about hitting that perfect home run, right? Like, and I guess that's the expert kind of imposter syndrome that wants to have like everything absolutely perfect before like you do something or present information or like solve something. And yeah. And it's funny because now I'm looking back on my career and I realize how many times I've gone through imposter syndrome. Like even when I first started out with acupuncture, mm-hmm. you're just like, you feel like you have to have this perfect point combination. And you know, if not, then it's just like, you know, if everything isn't magically totally better in one treatment, then you failed somehow. And but you just work past that because you realize it's not about that.
Yeah.
But it takes time. Definitely takes time.
I think there can be value as well in if you're feeling stuck because you know, you're feeling like an imposter in area A, to choose something that is entirely unrelated to that. So go over here to area B, mm-hmm. where you can allow yourself to be a beginner. Mm. So if you are feeling stuck because, I mean, whatever, if I feel like I'm not measuring up as a voice coach because I don't know everything in the world and I'm scrolling Instagram and seeing all these voice coaches offering all these tips and feeling like I just don't measure up. Because let me tell you, social media can suck for that. And I decide to go and join a softball league knowing that I'm shitty at softball, but whatever, it's a beer league and it's just fun. A bunch of people getting together on Tuesday nights to hit a ball and be in community and have fun together. And it doesn't matter if I'm not good. Point being, like, this is a completely made up, I don't play baseball, but it's a completely made up example. But point being,
maybe you will.
I can go over here and be a beginner at something and allow myself to not be an expert. And I think sometimes that can help us to lighten around the issue of
Holy.
Expertise and imposter syndrome in the area where we're feeling so heavy around it.
Totally. It's like you basically create a situation where there's less significance,
yeah.
right? And I guess that could go either way, right? So it doesn't matter. There's one, there's no pressure or expectation. Yeah. You've never played baseball before. You never picked up a bat or whatever. Like no one's expecting you to do anything, right? So then you can be present and just do it. And can it work the opposite way? Like, can you go to something that you do feel somewhat good at? Like, because this is just a genuine question. Like, have you ever done like a talent resume? Not like a resume, like your jobs, but like kind of things that you feel like you're good at that you would almost subscribe to as not a value. Like, you know, for me, like I feel like I'm a good driver, but so what, right? So I've never really think, but when I did the talent resume exercise, that was one of them, right? Or, you know, it could be anything, seeing the good in people or really good at making tuna fish salad, you know, like it'd be totally random things that you think are like totally.
I have never done totally that exercise. Dumb. That's an interesting one.
It's a great exercise because it's the stuff that you almost take for, like, it's the stuff you're like, whatever, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But you feel like actually, no, I can do that, right? Like
Yeah.
I can make cheesy noodles for my 4-year-old, right? Like nail that sauce. So I think when we're trying to make something not significant, sometimes we can go to either a place that's no pressure or maybe potentially a place where we feel like one of those things on our talent resume,
yeah.
right? And just kind of be like, okay. But having said that, and just kind of talking this through a little bit, I also think it's something like, the imposter syndrome isn't something to outrun or ignore.
No,
right? Is to kind of just be like, okay, well, what is this here? Like, what's the value of this for me right now? You know, and kind of asking that question. But regardless, a talent resume is a good exercise. Yeah. It is a very fun one to do. I don't know if it'd be good to do with the imposter syndrome or not, but I think it depends why you were doing it. But the talent resume is a good one just to do to nudge us out of that kind of overwhelm of self-judgment that can come with imposter syndrome.
Yep. I would agree with that. I think, too, that there can, in a weird, slightly twisted way, there can be actually a value to imposter syndrome if we choose to recognize it that way. And it means that we are actually venturing out of our comfort zones.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And we're perceptive enough, even if we're picking up on the societal kind of norms of you're not good enough or whatever, that we're honoring, that we're perceptive enough to kind of pick up on that.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah, perception and discomfort. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Whether or not it's the internal environment of imposter syndrome being uncomfortable that you have to work through, or the outward kind of situation we find ourselves in that potentially fosters it, right? Like, I guess imposter syndrome, if you go to like the high-end conferences and everything like that, if you're a nuclear physicist or something like that, you went there and it was just like the top minds, then you're kind of, there's a higher probably incidence of imposter syndrome there. But it is, it's reminding yourself that you've gone through the discomfort to expose yourself and get yourself there. Mm-hmm. There's another thought in there, but it's left me. It left.
Okay. I'm familiar with
it. It was an imposter and it left. It just left. I don't know why I just think of old TV shows when I hear the word imposter. It's like, I don't know. Anyways, I think usually when I get silly like that, it's kind of, I think, gearing towards the end here. Yeah. So... yeah, I think for me, imposter syndrome, when I first heard about it, you know, I resonated with it. And then admittedly, I judged myself for having it a little bit. And I think it really just, it embodies our relationship with judgment, both from the pressure we put on ourselves and for what's around in society that we absorb. And, but it's cool though, I think with a lot of things, because it's talked about more, that self-judgment about having it is becoming less and less. There's less kind of charge with it. And we'll put the name of the book in the notes and stuff, but the Valerie Young, she's the one that talked about the five different types and stuff. And that's a fun one to do too, because it just looks at it. It's almost, I found like reading the different types and kind of resonating with some of them, again, took some of the significance out of it in a way too, yeah. And which allowed me to kind of look at it a little bit more and be like, oh, okay, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just kind of, it's like, cause it's really at the end of the day, it's just a different habit that we have. So, yeah, that's my imposterness for right now.
So unrelated, but I have the Inspector Gadget theme in my head now.
So, well, imposter, right? Like,
Inspector Gadget.
Yeah, because he was good at unmasking imposters.
He was.
Yeah.
He was indeed.
Yeah. Well, on that note of high education and
Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah. Imposter.
There it is.
Thanks for joining our conversation today.
You can head over to thisbiglifepodcast.com for all the show notes and information.
If you loved what you heard here today, would you do us a favor and rate and review the show? It helps more people just like you discover these juicy conversations.
And if you know someone you think would love this particular episode, you can even go ahead and share it with them right now.
And if you have a topic you would love to hear us discuss, or someone you think would make a great guest for our show, you can submit your ideas using the link in the show notes.
And you can always find us on Instagram at This Big Life Podcast.
Thanks again. We'll be right back here in your ears next Tuesday.
See you then.